from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. And in this half hour, we welcome Terrence Galanter, former San Francisco film critic and journalist and bon vivant, who has left us to live out his Francophile expat dreams in Paris, where he now resides and actually does a number of things there, including hosts literary salons and other cultural events, offers personalized city tours of Paris, and has recently published a memoir called Paris par Hasard, From Bagels to Brioches. He joins us in studio for this Forum half hour.
Thank you, Michael.
Good to have you here.
It's great to be here. It's been a long time.
Yeah, much too long. And congratulations on your book.
Congratulations on yours.
Well, thank you. Where do we begin talking about this book? I thought we'd begin by talking about I thought, what a lead sentence when I picked this book up. I just want to give listeners this is what they call a great lead sentence. I had four fathers by the time I was 8 years old.
I can't take credit for that, but I will. I was involved in a friend of mine, John Baxter, who's a fairly well-known film biographer and memoirist in Paris, had been pressuring me to kind of write a real book because when I began, it was going to be a marketing episode. I was going to take a look at these little vignettes, the 500- and 600-word episodes of my experiences in Paris, try to package them and have a book. And he said, no, you got to find a through line. And so he invited me to be kind of a guinea pig at this writing class he put together and made me talk about my childhood. And in the process, Barbara Parosian, who's a friend from Melbourne now, we got to lunch and she brought that up because it was in the story. And it was perfect.
Well, you've got lots of stories here about your own childhood and everything. I didn't know you were called Mr. Paris. You mentioned John Baxter.
John Baxter's named me that. I didn't, even my ego doesn't allow me to identify myself as such.
But you were identified for a long time with Hispanic. I mean, you wrote for the Hispanic media. You were Guillermo.
Guillermo Medina.
Guillermo Medina. And underneath that was this Francophile just waiting to blossom, I guess, to some extent, right?
Well, I think, you've read the book, and I'd say that my experience has been somewhat like a chameleon. I've been able to integrate and assimilate myself into every culture I've lived in, and it's been a very interesting journey.
Well, your grandparents trained you to be the Francophile you are, though.
Grandma, thank God for Grandma, yeah.
Yeah. But to go and live in France and decide to make that decision. I mean, it's a pretty weighty decision, especially because I know you love the Bay Area.
Yeah, no, my family here, my grandchildren are here, my son's here, my ex-wife, I have a very good relationship with her here. But I'd found, I evacuated, if you will, 2 years ago. I'd been going off and on for the better part of the last 15 years. And I realized that at 61, I didn't want to die and say I should have gone to Paris or turned 70. I should have gone to Paris. And so I did it. And I felt a little bit like Cortez when he arrived in Veracruz. He burned all the ships on to Mexico. So I sold my 2,000-volume library, which was a painful decision. I kept Ben Heck's Child of the Century first edition, but not many others.
Billy Wilder's book, I'm sure you kept.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And my photograph of Billy Wilder, which is in the book, my experience with Billy.
There's also a sense of the books and the books about France and particularly about Paris and the movies about Paris. I mean, this is a kind of cornucopia, your book about not only Parisian food, but all and the differences.
Flirting.
But yeah, that's kind of a national sport, actually.
It is, yeah.
Among Parisians. And yet, the funny thing is there are still a lot of people who, when you mention Paris, they kind of exactly turn up their noses, but they think Parisians are snobby and they turn up their noses or something.
Well, Parisians are, it's like if they didn't exist, we'd have to invent them. They can be snobby, but what they are is enormously civil in ways that we've forgotten how to be in America. Now, you walk into a shop and it's bonjour, monsieur, dame. There's always you ask people are courteous in giving you directions. There's a real sense of human interplay that we've lost. I think that people here are terribly pressured, terribly inconsiderate very, very often in their social interactions, don't respect the children, the aged. So that exists. I can't tell you how many occasions I've been stopped, particularly in Normandy, where people will come up to me and essentially say, thank you. Were it not for you Americans, there would be no French people.
Although there was a kind of ugly Frenchman in one of your episodes that you write about.
There was.
Making too much noise, you loud Americans type of thing.
Well, so if you want to be loud, go back to America. But the nice part of that was that the family of four French people adjacent to us leaned over and said, don't pay attention to these people. This is not what we feel.
Part of the bad press that Parisians get, I think, has to do with maybe the fact that it's a big city, like Manhattan is a big city. You go to the south of France, you see very different kind of Gallic temperament, don't you?
Well, they're more Italian. You know, the French are really not Latin in the way that Italians and Spaniards are. But to come back to the French issue again and Americans, I think that a lot of it goes back to the early 50s. Contemporary kids are online. They speak English. They love American stuff. I think as Bayashel had said to me in a conversation when they were out protesting in 68 on the streets and very anti-American politically, they would go home and listen to Chuck Berry and American music and American culture. But if you look at the aftermath of the Second World War, where we fortunately did not have any of the deprivations that they did, rationing, obviously, being under the yoke of the Nazis, and then we arrived in after the war, big, lots of money, arrogant, loud, completely disrespectful of what these people had experienced and suffered over the last number of years. And I think that's what resonated. They really saw the ugly American. But the American has changed. The American that's coming to Paris right now, particularly the American that I see, reads a little bit about Paris, certainly loves food, be it through Alice Waters or whatever the influences are culinarily, and comes with a desire to participate and experience what it's like to live in France, which is in a totally different culture. So his interaction with the Frenchman is very different and changes that feeling.
Well, you have a kind of love affair with Paris that comes through in this book. I began to appreciate her serenity, her beauty, her civility, and her seasons, to enjoy her parks overrun with happy children, her benches draped with elderly lovers gazing into each other's eyes with the same affection and tenderness that they felt generations ago, and to appreciate the intelligence and interest of her teenage students who eagerly and knowledgeably talked to me about America, politics, food, and most passionately about cinema, and the civility of the gentle bonjour, monsieur. I mean, this sounds like utopia, the way you're writing.
Well, it is. I mean, I don't discuss the warts. There are warts. I mean, if you to get anything done. The bureaucracy is absolutely nightmarish at times. But
reading about growing anti-Semitism in France and xenophobia in France and the kind of Gallic culture.
Again, I think it's, you know, I mean, as a Jew, I certainly am sensitive to it. And what you have there is you have 6 million Arabs who've essentially come from the colonies, Morocco, Algeria, who are a part of a fabric of the culture. So that begins, and everything, you know, Israel becomes a tripwire for every thought. So that exists. The French have always had a certain obviously we have to go back and look at Dreyfus, and we look at their activities during the war. There is that undercurrent.
The Vichy government.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is Europe. You know, and we have to understand this is part of what's been part of the culture in Europe for centuries. So that exists. The other thing that happens is because of that, French Jews, unlike American Jews here in the middle class who are blatantly Jewish. I mean, you know, if you're in New York and you're black or Italian, you speak Yiddish. Even to the largest extent, even here in San Francisco. So we're aware of each other's cultures. There, I approached a friend at the Café de Flore one day, who's a Turkish Jew, and I walked up and said, Shalom, Habibi. And he looked at me and said, Terence, this is a lefty cafe. Shh. There's a fear of being that overt about it. And again, at that we can spend hours and days discussing the subconscious difference of being a Jew in Europe and being a Jew in America.
I want to talk also, though, about just being an expat in Paris and living in Paris. I mean, there's a whole a number of writers, particularly. I'm thinking about Lenny Michaels, who went over and lived there, or Diane Johnson, who you, I know, have become friends with.
Tom Sanchez is a good friend, and Tom is there.
Yeah, you go back to Ezra Pound and all of those who found their way to live in Paris.
Speaking
for a
of
brief
noted Jews, Ezra Pound, yes.
No, but I mean, James Joyce, they all lived in Paris. It was a place.
James Jones.
The place for writers to gravitate.
Well, I think to some degree it still exists. I mean, I hear great things about Berlin.
Isn't Edmund
today.
White there too, in fact?
He was. Yeah. And he's back. He's teaching. I think he's teaching in Princeton. But I think what Paris does for all of us is it allows us to be eccentric. It allows us to be quirky. As I quote Johnny Mathis in the book, you know, in my case, it allows me to be me. I can be, and without editing myself. And to some degree, I find that I have to edit myself in America. That there's a, you know, like grow up. Well, I don't want to grow up, you know. And Paris is a place, it's an adult playground. Guys like us can have great times in Paris.
I'm going to invite our listeners to join this conversation. I know there are many of you who have spent time in Paris. Do you love it and, well, sort of venerate it almost in the way that Terence Galanter does? Or what are your feelings about Paris? And let's hear from you. In fact, especially some of you who maybe spent some time recently in Paris, your impressions and your thoughts about living there. Would you give up the Bay Area for Paris? Maybe would be a question, too. In fact, Terence Galanter's daughter married a Parisian, and she's there.
And she's there. Yes.
Our toll free
number.
It gives
great massage, by the way, if you're coming to Paris.
Well, by the way, when I think about, we get a real picture of Paris mainly through writers, I suppose, like Adam Gopnik, when you think about, or David Levitt. But you also get this different side of Paris from different writers who have lived.
Well, Adam's, I think, a little skewed because
I got to give the number. Hold on a second. It's toll free, by the way, and feel free to join us. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls, so feel free to join the conversation again. Toll free, 866-733-6786. You can also communicate with us or join this conversation with your questions or comments by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website and posting your questions or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. I'm sorry, were you going to say something about Adam?
No, I was saying that that book was basically written from the cafe floor or de Magot. I don't think he moved very much out of the neighborhood, and much is taking place in surrounding areas that were not as fashionable before. Although there are several aspects of that book I like very much. But I think there are a lot of people that are seeing a different kind of Paris. There's a book by Andrew Hussey called The Secret History of Paris that I highly recommend. He's a professor at the Liverpool, London University in the 7th. And he's a Liverpudlian Mick, as he's self-described. But he talks about people like François Villon and really goes into the characters, the crazy characters, and not so much the people that we know that we aspire to and put on a shrine.
Well, we're going to bring our callers and emailers into this discussion, but talk about putting on a shrine. I'm going to you as a longtime film critic, and this may sound like a trivial question, but there's always that joke about how Parisians, French in general, but Parisians specifically, love Jerry Lewis. And I made that joke on the air, and some French woman called up and she said, I'm so tired of hearing about this, and we don't really love Jerry Lewis.
I haven't heard his name in a long time, and I don't have an answer as to why.
What American filmmakers do they love now? In Paris and in France. They love Woody Allen, don't they?
Amazingly, yeah. They do love Woody Allen. They were particularly the people who came out of the Nouvelle Vague, Truffaut, and a lot of controversy around Godard right now with his special Oscar coming up, were influenced by the American filmmakers of the 30s and the 40s, people like Howard Hawks, because the period between the war, from like 1939 on, nothing came in. So they didn't see films like Red River until 1950. They were blown away. They didn't see films like Out of the Past or certain Bogart films later in that period, some of the great Howard Hawks films. And so all of a sudden, it gave them this extraordinary energy and another way of looking at film. So they've loved that caliber filmmaker enormously.
You love writing about these films that feature Paris in your mm-hmm. book, The Last Time I Saw Paris and Irma LaDuce. And I mean, there are some really great Parisian
great films. A Funny
films.
Face with Fred Astaire doing his takeoff on Richard Avedon is a great film. There's so much about Paris to celebrate. And of course, I always love Lubitsch's Ninotchka and the great scene where he's talking about Paris. And he said, well, personally, Paris is a nice place, but I prefer Paramount's Paris, which was the Paris that he created. And Billy wrote that script for Lubitsch.
Let's bring our callers in, and we'll begin, Michelle, with you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just
morning,
wanted
Michelle.
To say, good morning. I was living in Paris as a student studying photography. And what I was so impressed by was when I would meet new people and tell them I was just a student and studying photography, the amount of exuberance and enthusiasm and support I would get just by saying I was an artist. Whereas, if I was in California, they go, oh, yeah, you work at a coffee shop.
No, there's no question. There's a great premium placed on your value as a person, and not so much your value financially. I always say,
but also on artists and philosophers and writers and thinkers. I mean, much more than we see here, and also I'd add professors.
They're valued in ways. Here, if you say to someone that you're a writer, they want to know what your rank is in Amazon and how many books you sold last week. You tell somebody you're a writer there, now you're a subject of interest. And it's so that It's who you are that's important, not so much what you have, the size of your car, the size of your property in Marin or wherever you happen to live in the Bay Area. And so you're right, absolutely. There's a great and if you're enthusiastic about a subject like that, they're passionately happy to talk to you about it.
And we thank you, Michelle, for that call. We go to another caller. Joe, you're on. Good morning.
Yeah. I have a question to the speaker. That is to say, what I've noticed is that Paris seems to hold much more of a figure than so many of the other great cities of the world. I've done a little traveling, and I've seen some of the other great cities in the world, but Paris always seems to hold that much more of a fascination. I don't know if this is particularly for Americans. I was wondering if the gentleman could explain why exactly Paris occupies this special position in our
it goes back to Louis XIV, who basically created the brand that we now know as Paris, literally. And he, from that point on, we began to associate elegance, luxury, as being French, almost by definition.
And even in the case of Louis XIV, opulence, you think about Versailles and how excessive that opulence is. But it's also the romantic city, and often associated with romance.
Well, there's no question. To be in love in Paris, you walk along the banks of the Seine, it invigorates you, it enlarges your spirit, it encourages you. And the other thing is that when you smile at a woman in Paris, she doesn't give you the colts there and want to, you know, send you off on a felony charge. She's likely to smile if she's interested, or if she appreciates it, she give you a little smile.
You had some felony charges in your day?
No. I stopped smiling at women in San Francisco.
Actually, there's probably one of the most beautiful sights I think I've seen is going down the Seine.
I hope I haven't offended every female listener in the
Well, let's hope not. Going down the Seine at night and seeing Notre Dame lit up and everything is really quite inimitable.
It's inspirational. There's in the right light at the Place de la Concorde, the fountains are lit up, the Eiffel Tower is illuminated, and there is a giant Ferris wheel at certain times of the year, which has almost an iridescent light blue light. And at that point, at 2 o'clock in the morning, you're looking at that and you say, "And there must be a god."
But you know, San Francisco's a pretty wonderful and...
I'm not here to slam San Francisco.
It has its own romance for many people, and it has some extraordinary qualities that draw people like a magnet over the world.
The French love San Francisco.
I know
they do. It's the one city that they absolutely are fascinated by, I think because it's physically... they can move around in this. They love New York also because it's Pluto. It's nothing like it in the world.
Pluto.
Which is no longer a planet.
That's right. It's not a planet anymore. Gabrielle is our next caller. Gabrielle, join us. Hi.
Bonjour. So, je rêve de vivre à Paris. I dream of living in Paris. And one of the reasons that I haven't...
The dream is mother to the act.
Pardon me?
The dream is mother to the act.
Yes, indeed, but the nature of my question has to do with all of the administrative hurdles and the work restrictions. Sure, I would love to live there, but I need to work there in order to live. And I wonder if you have any sort of fast-track ideas on how one could kind of overcome the visas and all the sort of administrative
things. A question beyond my realm of expertise.
It's a bureaucratic nightmare.
It is a nightmare. If you are doing what I'm doing and you're essentially self-employed, you can fly somewhat under the radar. I hope the French ambassador is not listening.
He's a regular listener.
That part of it is complicated, but I would suggest if you're interested, you know, come for a little bit of time, carve out a month if you can at some point, get a sense of, I don't know what your business is. I'd be happy to talk to you off air, but... come up with some kind of a plan that allows you to live for a while until you can figure out how to do it. But there is no easy way to do it, that's for sure.
Good luck to you, Gabrielle. And on we go to Berkeley. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment that I agree with your guest that the Parisian character and the French character in general is very civil, and we could do with a lot more of that in this country. And then once you establish relationship with the people, whether shopkeepers, friends, etc., they're incredibly warm and giving. And we've always enjoyed our trips to France, in particular. And as I say, the what is often, I believe, interpreted as snobism is really an elegant reserve.
Oh, I absolutely agree. The other thing that takes place. Is that, you know, here we're looking, you walk into a cheese shop, wine shop. The retailer wants them to immediately establish what you can afford, sell you the most expensive product he can, sell you as many products as he can, as quickly as he can. Whereas in France, you walk in and say, I'm having a dinner party tonight. I have eight people coming, and I need some cheese. And he says, well, what are you serving and what time are you serving it? Because cheese A won't be ready until 10 o'clock, and cheese B won't be ready until 11 o'clock. And his objective, he's a professor of cheese, is to give you and your guests the best possible experience you can have, irrespective of whether he sold you a 4-euro piece of cheese or 10 euros worth of cheese, because you're going to come back. You're going to trust him, and it's a relationship. He'll see you the next morning, and if you give him a positive sign, he's got a big smile on his face. He's done his job.
You know, all of this talk about French civility and elegance and warmth and giving and so forth, and yet I suppose any people, any city that's identified in any way often has sort of vectors that go both the whole mm-hmm. continuum. But you do hear a lot of talk about French hauteur, for example, and French arrogance and those kinds of things, which would be almost countervailing to what we're saying.
You know, as I said before, it certainly exists. There's no question that there's a certain level of snobbery. But it's not things occur at a very, very human scale. People are not going to be disrespectful to you out of unless you've really done something for them. I think that what the French person has, I don't know if it's analogous to New York necessarily, but they're living in this magnificent city. You walk down the street every day. The architecture is spectacular. You're inspired when you turn the corner of your apartment, wherever you live. There's something to grab your eye and grab your emotion. And I think they appreciate that they're living in this spectacular place. But if you appreciate it and you value it and you show that enthusiasm, I mean, a cab driver is going to love you if you talk about Paris with passion.
Especially if you do it in French like you do. Well, here's a listener, Edward, who says, I lived in Pazinaz, an artistic enclave in southern France, 20 minutes from the Mediterranean in 2006. I lived in Bobigny, a highly diverse suburb. Is that how it's B-O-B-I-G-N-Y?
Bobigny.
Bobigny.
It's a stop on the metro.
A diverse suburb of Paris in 2009. The French are not snotty, nor snobbish, nor rude. What they are is honest. If you ask someone, comment vas-tu, you don't get a robotic fine like you get here. What you get is an honest answer. They're very friendly, open, inviting, and helpful. The French are Latino. They just don't realize it. Spanish and French are nearly the same language. They take siestas. They enjoy bullfighting. Football is a passion.
But you want to say, comment allez-vous? Because you don't want to tutoyer. We have the distinction we don't have in America of the personal and the impersonal.
It's like to and usted in Spanish.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me go to Robert next in San Francisco. Hi, Robert.
Hello. Thank you. I just want to make a quick comment in deference to your own book, which I'm just suggesting that people might want to augment with the Janet Flanner journals.
Mm-hmm.
The three volumes from 44 goes through to 70, and I remember my own reading them for the first time in the early 70s, and I learned more about France and Paris in those volumes than I think any other books I've ever read or any experiences I've ever had.
Well, I agree with you. Janet Flanner was Citizen Jeanette. She basically was the predecessor to Adam Gopnik, who established the template for English language writers writing journalism for the New Yorker at that time. And there are many, many books that I invite you to visit my website, paris-expat.com, and visit my bookstore. There are probably 40 or 50 books that I recommend to go back into that period. People like Elliot Paul's The Last Time I Saw Paris, the Montparnasse Diaries of John Glasgow, and they're all very, very...
Let's mention your book again. It's Paris par Hasard, that's A-S-A-R-D, From Bagels to Brioches, and here's a question from Tim, who says, does Mr. Galanter have any films to recommend to a 13-year-old going to Paris for the first time next June?
What, The Red Balloon?
That's a good recommendation.
You wonder off the top of my head.
Robin writes, every woman and every man should visit and walk through Paris at least once every decade from their 20s forward.
I wouldn't wait every decade. I'd every couple of years.
Mary writes, please talk about Liebling and Root.
Waverly Root, the food of France, which is unfortunately out of print, but I think you can find it at A. Libris. He breaks down French cooking into various fats, butter in Normandy, olive oil in the south of France, and goose fat in the east. It's a remarkably well-done book. And
it's also remarkable when I was in Paris how thin they are, you know, because they not only do the food have a lot of, shall we say, caloric and carbs to them, but It's just amazing. I mean, it must be the metabolism or something. Oh, they drink.
Well, we walk a lot, and we do drink a lot of wine, and include myself in that. But, you know, we're not eating 32-ounce porterhouses. We're having a little 4-ounce piece of meat with some fries and a glass of wine.
And Bruce, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a student of French culture. My wife is half French, also Jewish, and she's always had the opinion that as much as she loves France and she spent a lot of time in France, there's a real underbelly of anti-Semitism there that's kind of like a double-edged sword to the, you know, all the ways that we appreciate the beauty. Mm-hmm. And we were just there this summer in Corsica and Paris, and I've always never had a problem with any kind of French attitude, but I found that there was a real hostility towards people with, like, young children, just dealing with airports and metro and buses, and I was just a little put off, and it made me a little sad. And I don't know, just something I wanted to share.
All right.
I frankly don't find very much of it. Certainly, it will occur, but for the large part, I see a fairly well-mannered. I mean, I wish our kids were as well-mannered as the kids that I encounter in France. And the whole issue, I think, of anti-Semitism could be the subject of a lengthy program. Maybe we'll have Robert Paxton on, and we can discuss it in greater detail.
Let me thank the caller, and I want to get you on, David from Sunnyvale. Good morning.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a single heterosexual man, emphasis single. And if I visit France or Paris, how do I not have it be a lonely experience?
Well, you call me. It's, you know, you visit my website, paris-expat.com, sign up for my weekly newsletter, and you come to the Cafe Flora at 11:30 on Sunday, where I have office hours, and I'll introduce you to plenty of single women.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We've done some matchmaking here with Terrence Glendering. Again, his book, Paris Bar Assad, From Bagels to Brioches. How can people get your book?
Well, first of all, it's Paris Par Hasard.
Yeah, I didn't
Bagels
want
to Brioche.
Like, give it the Gaelic thing.
Several ways. If you're in...
I anglicize everything.
If you're in Mill Valley on Monday, I'll be speaking at the Book Depot in downtown Mill Valley at 7 p.m. I'll be at the Mechanics Institute Library at 57 Post Street, fourth floor, on Tuesday at 6 p.m., and you can order it online at paris-expat.com, and I'll be happy to sign it and mail it to you from Paris.
Terry, good to have you on.
Michael, great to see you again.
Good luck with your
book.
Thank
you, listeners.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And thank our listeners indeed. Thank you for being with us here on Forum this morning. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, to our producers, Judy Campbell and Kevin Guillory, to our engineer, Danny Bringer, and to our interns, Aiden Stone, Suki Lewis, and Alana Cadavani. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I already said that. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.